The next matter, number 23-2088, Jose Rodolfo Escobar-Larin v. Merrick B. Garland. At this time, would counsel for the petitioner please introduce himself on the record to begin?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Sang-Yup Kim for petitioner. Chief Judge Barrow, may I reserve 1 minute for rebuttal? Thank you. There are many issues. Let me start with the asylum time bar issue. So here's context matters. So IJ found petitioner mentally incompetent to pursue asylum without assistance of counsel. IJ also found, based on his 2022 diagnosis of unspecified schizophrenia, that his new social group, which is Salvadorans with unspecified schizophrenia spectrum and other psychotic disorders who exhibit erratic behaviors, that's cognizable. Nevertheless, IJ and BIA found that that did not constitute changed circumstance exception to the one-year asylum time bar. And when we read the IJ's decision, the only reason that IJ and BIA did so was because at the time of his entry to the United States in 2004, he was eligible for asylum on a different ground. And that was the only reason. So I read the IJ and BIA decision as to the change circumstance exception only applies to the pre-existing legal basis.
And what do we do about the fact that even if we could read the IJ decision that way, the BIA decision doesn't, to me, it doesn't read the same. And it's sort of notable in the way it phrases it. It doesn't say, we agree with the IJ. It says, we don't see reason to disturb. I think it's something like, we find no reason to disturb the IJ's decision.
Or even better
for the government, I think, it's the BIJ's ruling or something like that.
I think this confusion is because BIA is the one paragraph mixed the extraordinary circumstance and changed circumstance all together. But if the court looks at the conclusion of the BIA decision, the BIA calculated the reasonable period of time from 2007 to 2022. So what that means, and then they cited both the regulation of the extraordinary circumstance and changed circumstance. So it makes little sense to assume that BIA actually considered that claim and addressed that claim properly.
So that's a separate argument, if I'm following. One ground you're objecting is they had the mistaken view that if there was some other ground of eligibility that existed then, tough luck, a change in circumstance that gives you a new ground for eligibility can't be the basis for it. And I understand that you're saying that's legal error. And the IJ used Reed to have done that. But I take it what you're now saying to me is even if the BIA affirmed the IJ without embracing that rationale, it still failed to consider the special new diagnosis of schizophrenia. Is that the idea?
Yes.
Yeah, but then the issue there is, was that presented to the BIA?
Yes, Your Honor, as we explained.
Yeah, but the explanation left me with some questions about how clearly it was presented to the BIA that the new diagnosis was meant to be an independent contention that that's the change condition, the new diagnosis, as opposed to, so is there something you can point me to where you make clear to the BIA that what's being argued to them is, even though there was this long pattern of mental illness, put all that aside, the change condition is this is the first time we actually got a diagnosis?
So we admit that before the BIA, the only argument the petitioner made was, quote, onset of medical conditions. And so he did not specify or include the magic phrase of 2022 diagnosis. However, in the first BIA brief, he mentioned diagnosis. He included that phrase into the BIA.
But did he identify even then that put aside everything else, the change condition is I now have a diagnosis I never had before?
I think we can fairly interpret the BIA brief. I don't think the way the exhaustion, the requirement that this court requires is not that visit, as long as there is a notice of substantive argument as to what the basis of the changed circumstance exception was, then that should be sufficient.
Well, just on this record, there were earlier references to to schizophrenia in earlier medical records. So it seems to me if the idea is that this particular document is meant to stand out and itself represent a changed condition compared to all other documents, somewhat incumbent on petitioner to apprise the adjudicating body that that's the case.
Even assuming that, Your Honor, this court finds that that specific 2022 diagnosis was not exhausted under the statute, We still think that the BIA failed to apply the correct standard.
And that's because you're saying it applied the IJ standard?
But even putting that issue aside,
okay,
it just makes little sense how then BIA could say that the calculation of the reasonable period of time was between 2017 when he became 18 and 22 when he filed a asylum application. Because that credibly indicates that BIA did not even consider all this mental illness, onset of mental illness, as the basis of the changed circumstance exception. Otherwise, I just do not see how any adjudicator could look at the BIA's decision. For example, if the BIA said something like in 2014 and 2022 of 8 years of the difference, then the court could look at the, interpret the BIA's decision as that they considered that mental illness as basis, but then insufficient to satisfy the standard under changed circumstance exception. But that's not what the BIA did. The BIA's conclusion is very clear. They only calculated between 2017, when he became 18, and 2022, when he filed his asylum application.
Does that argument depend, though, on what was just previously discussed between you and the chief judge, that he did raise before the BIA the 2013-2014 time period?
I don't think it depends on that argument, because even assuming that the BIA did not adopt the precise the angle of the review that IJ did, I think this, what's clear is, at a minimum, the onset of the medical conditions constituted a change in circumstance. That argument was preserved, even if the court finds the 2022 diagnosis was not exhausted. Then the BIA then had a duty to address whether that claim, the onset of medical conditions-based change circumstance, was sufficient to satisfy the standard of the change circumstance exception. But the BIA did none. BIA only considered...
So just let me understand this version of the argument on just in simple terms. When does the change occur on this account?
With respect to the onset of the medical condition, it could be 2014, between 2014 and 2022. There's no one point that...
But I'm saying it's some point between 2014 and 2022?
Certainly, Your Honor.
And the problem you're saying is that the BIA, by looking at it from 2017 to 2022...
2007.
2007 to 2022 is... But... Why isn't it inclusive of that? They seem to say there's no change during that whole period.
I don't think that's how the court should read the BIA decision, because each argument that BIA is making, BIA actually cites the regulation. And all the points about 2014, the medical conditions, BIA cited the extraordinary circumstance regulation. So I just do not, I read the BIA decision again and again. I just do not see how the court can read the BIA decision in a way that they consider 2014 medical conditions as a basis for change circumstance exception or 2000.
So what do you think it's doing in that passage when it's talking about the medical conditions as it is? It's talking about them only in the context of extraordinary circumstances?
Yes, Your Honor.
And then on your view, what is the BIA saying with respect to change circumstances?
I think BIA... Our interpretation is BIA just endorsed the IJ's view.
Where would you point to the BIA doing that?
Because the BIA's conclusion, where they cited extraordinary regulation and changed circumstance regulation, both of them, they calculated only the reasonable period of time between 2007 and 2022. That's exactly what the IJ did in the changed circumstance exception. IJ said, because he had been eligible for asylum, at the time of entry, the only change circumstance was when he became 18 in 2007. And then that was not, so they concluded, the IJ concluded as end of that inquiry. And they move on to the extraordinary circumstance. And the BIA's reasoning is not different. So our reading of the BIA's decision of that paragraph, the conclusion where they cited the specific regulation, that the BIA made the same mistake that IJ did. And I do not think the BIA made an independent assessment as to for the question of the changed circumstances exception.
And just so I'm following on this part, part with respect to the changed circumstances. I had thought the BIA had made a assessment of the timeliness of him responding to the mental health conditions or apprising anyone of that as a ground. Am I wrong about that?
So the I apologize. So the, when we look at, I'm looking at the BIA decision of that paragraph.
Where are you in the
page 2, the paragraph 11 of the record, and page 2, the paragraph where the BIA talks about the extraordinary circumstance, changed circumstance. So the BIA is cited, when BIA talked about the legal disability, so BIA starts with the first thesis sentence that the petitioner did not meet either prong, and then BI started with extraordinary circumstance. The regulation that the BI cited in the second sentence is extraordinary circumstance. And BI further explains about that of the medical conditions. And then BI makes a conclusion that we will not disturb the IJ's finding that his asylum application over 14 years after attaining the age of majority was unreasonable, considering all relevant facts. And then they cited both regulations of extraordinary circumstance and changed circumstance. So our reading of the BI decision does not reflect that BI actually considered what happened after petitioner became 18, which was 2007. And that's precisely consistent with what the IJ did. So even giving some benefit of the doubt to the BIA, I just do not see how this paragraph analysis is different from the IJ's analysis.
And the key thing there is because it says the immigration judge appropriately evaluated the reasonableness of the delay from 2007?
Yes, over 18 years.
When he turned 18 years old?
Yes. Over the 14 years, that's the last sentence of the conclusion. Over the 14 years means between 2007 and 8 and 2022.
And you say that he sufficiently raised before the BIA that he was making a change circumstance argument with respect to roughly the 2014 period.
Yes. He didn't say 2014, but he said, quote, onset of medical conditions.
Yeah.
So I believe that this court should find that argument is exhausted. But even if the discord does not find that either...
Can I just understand, how is this last sentence, this is what I'm tripped up on, just I want your view of it. First sentence of the paragraph says that we're not going to disturb that the respondents must show both changed circumstances and extraordinary circumstances. And then the last sentence is, we will not disturb the immigration judge's finding that the respondent's filing was applicable over 14 years after attaining the age of majority was unreasonable. And then they say, considering all relevant facts. Then I guess it cites IJ at 14. Is that page of the IJ's decision referring to the period of time over which he's had claims of mental disability, or is that referring to the eligibility based on the grandmother?
That goes into the page 14 is about the extraordinary circumstance, the conclusion of the extraordinary circumstance. However, I'm just reading the
extraordinary circumstance meaning the mental health issues.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's why I guess I'm having trouble seeing, but you just said we just can't tell whether it addressed it. At a minimum, we can't tell whether the BIA address this argument or not.
So I think basically the BIA knew the IJ's decision analysis. And for this court to assume that BIA did something independent,
you'd have to have it be clearer than it is.
There has to be some clear indication that the BIA did.
And then last point, if you're right about this and we get past the timeliness issue, then what?
Then I think this court has two ways to adjudicate this case. Either I'm optimistic that this court would grant a petition for the second petition for review of the motion to reopen denial. So either this court can do so on the merits of the asylum, humanitarian asylum, withholding, and CAT claims. But even putting that issue aside, I think this court can also do so based on the current existing record of the case. And especially, I see that my time is already up. I can.
Yes, but would you mind telling me, on your view, is there a distinction between reasonable possibility of persecution for humanitarian asylum purposes and well-founded fear? And if there's a distinction, which burden is higher, which one is lower?
I think it should be the same, because the expectation that the humanitarian asylum expects, it should be the same as the asylum standard. So, which means the future persecution should be equal to the humanitarian asylum. The only difference is that there's no nexus requirement of the humanitarian asylum serious other aspect, but in contrast, the asylum has the nexus requirement.
And do we then have to address the jurisdictional issue, the separate jurisdictional issue about what's reviewable?
I don't think the court needs to address that issue if the court agrees with us that the IJ and BIA failed to failed to interpret the law correctly, failed to comply with the BIA's.
Because it's pure legal.
That's pure legal question. So I think this court can avoid the mixed question of law and fact jurisdiction.
And are you making a mixed question of law and fact argument also, though?
We are also making that argument.
So I understand how we could avoid it. I mean, if we... Oh, I see. Because if we find for you on the standard, then we don't know how they would apply the standard again. So there's no reason to address the mixed fact law question under that standard till they do it.
Yes.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Unless the court has any further questions, I'll save other arguments for the rebuttal time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. At this point, would counsel for the respondent please introduce herself on the record to begin?
Hello, my name is Linda Doe, and I represent the respondent, the United States Attorney General. Here, the court is without jurisdiction to review the agency's pretermission of asylum on timeliness grounds because petitioner has not set forth a colorable constitutional claim or legal question.
What about the claim we just were talking about for a long time?
Your Honors, petitioner's claim is unexhausted. Petitioner
what about not the 2022 one, but the argument they're making about the onset in 2014?
Yes, Your Honors. As the board held, petitioner did not show that he had filed his asylum application within a reasonable period of time of his treatment in 2014 for a mental health condition or within a reasonable time when he became 18 years of age, which was in 2008.
Where do you see them addressing the 2014 point?
AR3, Your Honors. Immigration judge, or the board's decision at AR3. The immigration judge permissibly determined that petitioner has not shown a public. It's in the IJ's decision. I think it's IJ's decision at 26. The court finds that the respondent received medical treatment for his mental health condition in 2014. The court finds the respondent he did not file an asylum application until April 22, 2022. Therefore, he did not establish that he filed it within a reasonable period of time.
Is that what the IJ said?
Yes, at AR 89.
And then you're saying the BIA affirmed that part of its ruling?
Yes, Your Honor, because the boards held that petitioner did not show that he filed it within a reasonable time of the asserted, changed, or extraordinary circumstances.
Yeah, but see, I'm having trouble seeing where in the BIA's decision it's affirming the assessment regarding 2014 as the starting point. Because when I look at the paragraph where the BIA is affirming the IJ, it never gives a starting point as 2014 as a relevant date to be looking at and assessing anything.
AR3, a medical record supports the immigration's determination that petitioner was first diagnosed with a mental health condition on December 22nd, 2014.
That's in the fact section of it, right?
That's also the BIA's decision at 3.
In the fact section of the BIA's decision.
Oh, yes, sorry. Yes.
In its assessment of the changed circumstances, there's only one paragraph, I think, that's giving the BIA's legal analysis of why he loses on changed circumstances. Isn't that right?
Well, the board said asserted, changed, and or extraordinary.
Yes. That's the only paragraph in the BIA's decision that's assessing the changed circumstances argument, correct?
Yes, Your Honors, but
in that paragraph, I don't see any analysis that thinks 2014 is a relevant date to be evaluating anything, which makes me wonder how we can say we're clear that the BIA grappled with this argument in affirming the IJ.
Well, Your Honors, in Petitioner's appeal to the board, Petitioner acknowledged that he was first seen for a mental health condition in 2014. He did not contend that the agency failed to consider the 2022 diagnosis.
I know that. I'm talking about the 2014 point.
Yeah.
So now you're saying it was preserved, the BIA, the 2014 point.
Yeah.
And then I'm asking, where does it show that the BIA engaged with that argument?
To the extent that the board held that Petitioner did not file within a reasonable period of time of the asserted changed and extraordinary circumstances.
That sentence, where's that sentence?
One second, Your Honor.
The only thing I see is we will not disturb the immigration judge's finding that the respondent's filing of his asylum application over 14 years after attaining the age of majority was unreasonable considering all relevant facts. Now, I don't know whether when it cites the IJ at 14, it's citing to the IJ at that point, but then it's citing the extraordinary circumstances regulation, I think.
Well, I mean,
not the changed circumstances. So, I mean, our question is, before we can affirm the BIA on the ruling, we'd like to know the BIA made it.
Well, Your Honors, the board goes into further to note that Petitioner was able to work for and provide for his family for a number of years thereafter.
No, it definitely does that, and that all seems very relevant to the extraordinary circumstances argument.
Of 24, but it could still also go to the... The very first first sentence of the paragraph. The respondent must show that he filed his application with a reasonable period given the asserted changed and extraordinary circumstances.
Yeah.
So that's the burden that petitioner must show, and he didn't show it in regards to either.
But then it gives reasons for why it didn't show it.
Yes, Your Honor.
And none of those reasons seem to key in on 2014. So how do I know that the reason the BIA thought he failed is because even though we considered the 2014 point he's making, we're rejecting it?
Because petitioner argued 2014 in his his appeal brief, and the board is saying from 2014 where he was seen by mental health, was seen at the emergency room. Additionally, the board assesses it from 2014 and to the circumstances thereafter, showing that he was sufficiently competent where he was able to support his family. He held a job for 3 to 4 years. Accordingly,
okay.
He didn't show that was a reasonable period of time from those circumstances.
I see. A medical record supports the immigration judge that the respondent was first diagnosed on 2014. I got it. Okay.
Accordingly, petitioner's claim is simply a factual dispute. It is not, as petitioner argue, a mixed question of law to undisputed facts. Here, the facts are in dispute. Petitioner claims that he was first diagnosed with schizophrenia in 2022, and the record clearly shows that as of 2014, the medical records indicate that he had a history of schizophrenia as of 2014. Accordingly, Petitioner has not raised a constitutional claim or legal question with regards to the agency's denial of asylum on timeliness grounds. Additionally, moving forward, Petitioner acknowledged that the untimeliness of his asylum application precludes him from humanitarian asylum. In Petitioner's opening brief, he indicated that humanitarian asylum is available to those with no timeliness issue. Accordingly, the court can dismiss the petition for review on this regard. Moving forward, substantial evidence supports the agency's denial of withholding of removal because Petitioner has not shown that there is a clear probability of future persecution on account of his protected ground, which he defined as Salvadorians with unspecified schizophrenia spectrum, and other psychotic disorders who exhibit erratic behavior. Here, the agency looked at the various potential risk of harm by the various persons that petitioner fears. The agency acknowledged that the evidence revealed that Salvadoran society stigmatizes those with schizophrenia with mental disabilities as being locos. However, this court has held that a general climate of discrimination does not constitute persecution. The agency further found that the record did reveal that persons with mental disabilities are subject to neglect, abuse, lack of resources, and are periodically targeted and killed. While the agency did not specifically delineate each source of harm, the record evidence that it cited shows that the sources include government officials, mental health care workers and institutions, as well as gangs. In short, reading the entirety of the agency's decision and the evidence presented, it is clear that the group purposely targeting and killing such persons would be gangs. The Supreme Court has held that the agency action may be upheld where its reason is of less than ideal clarity, where its path may reasonably be discerned. And to the extent that persons with disability are periodically targeted and killed, the court has recognized that intermittent instances does not suffice to show a clear probability that a petitioner will be persecuted. And finally, while the court has recognized that persecution is an extreme concept that does not include all treatment that the society regards as unfair, unjust, or unconstitutional, petitioner has not shown that the abuse and lack of resources or neglect that he fears is persecution on account of a protected ground. To the extent that petitioner claims that the agency did not consider the state of emergency, again, the claim is unexhausted. Petitioner had solely raised it in the context of humanitarian asylum and cat protection, which do not require a nexus to a protected ground. And finally, substantial evidence supports the agency's denial of cat protection because petitioner did not demonstrate that there's a clear probability of torture by government officials, gangs, or mental health care workers in institutions. Here, the agency applied a holistic approach and found that and considered all relevant evidence pertinent to the risk of torture. The agency found that petitioner did not show a particular risk of torture and that his claim was based on a series of suppositions, which did not lend to a clear probability that he would be tortured.
If we disagree with you on the timeliness of his request for humanitarian asylum, just on the timeliness point, do you have a position on the merits of that claim about not whether it should be granted, but whether he is otherwise statutorily ineligible because there's no reasonable possibility? Or is this question that I'm asking premature? Okay. If we disagree with you on the timeliness question.
Let's say it's premature.
Okay, yeah.
Moving forward, the agency found that petitioner did not establish a particular risk of torture by the state of emergency, which was an initiative aimed at gangs, and that a pattern of human rights abuses did not suffice to show that he more likely than not would be tortured. And while Dr. Montrose opined that petitioner's return could lead to a high risk of torture, high risk of developing a number of psychological symptoms, which could increase his contact with officials, the record was unclear as to what would happen thereafter. Finally, while gangs have perpetrated killings of persons with disability, the record did not evince.
I want to just go back to this premature point, just so I understand. If we thought that the BIA decision failed to engage with the 2014-based argument for changed conditions, because we just couldn't tell whether it did or didn't, given the way the BIA wrote it. I'm not saying that's what we're going to do. I'm just saying if we thought that, what would then happen? We'd vacate and remand for them to do the change conditions analysis that we're saying, we'd be saying they hadn't done. And so we really wouldn't address anything else at that point, right, until that was done.
That's correct, Your Honors. Again, because
there'd be no reason, we would have no reason to get to the merits until they've assessed on their own whether there was a change condition such that it was timely. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honors.
Okay.
But again, here...
I understand.
And petitioner did not show it was within a reasonable period of time given those circumstances. Finally, in the board's decision, having assessed all the various factors in support of petitioner's claim, it determined that overall it concluded that the IJ did not commit legal or clear factual error in finding that petitioner did not establish a likelihood of torture by or with the acquiescence of the government, indicating that the board had considered petitioner's claim in total altogether and as a whole. In light of the foregoing, petitioner has not shown that a conclusion contrary to the agency's denial is compelled, and request that the court dismiss in part and deny the remainder of the petition for review.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. At this time, counsel for the petitioner, please reintroduce yourself on the record. You have a one-minute rebuttal.
May it please the court, saying you came for petitioner. Your Honor, I just want to be very clear about what the BIA did. So the regulation ACFR 1208.4A4 is changed circumstance, and A5 is extraordinary circumstance. The BIA's paragraph begins with conclusion, with citation of both regulations. And then BIA moved on to extraordinary circumstance by citing A5, and then does the assessment just like how IJ did. Once they're done, they begin with, we will not disturb that sentence, make a conclusion that he's filing his application over 14 years after attaining the age of a majority was unreasonable considering all relevant facts, and they cite A5 and A4. So this is exactly how the IJ did. Now, if there's some doubt that this court is unclear as to what the BIA did, then that's also another ground for vacature.
And if that's what we did, we wouldn't do anything else, because until that gets resolved by the BIA, we don't know whether we have jurisdiction to do anything.
Correct.
And so just so I track it, the fact that they cite to A5 and A4 in the penultimate sentence of that paragraph, you say, in light of everything that came in between, leaves it at least ambiguous whether the reference to the 2014 document is being referred to only in the context of extraordinary circumstances.
That's correct.
And therefore ambiguous as to whether what they were doing in that with respect to the changed circumstances is just adopting the IJ's theory.
That's correct.
Which you say was legal error.
That's correct. Because objectively...
So I guess we'd have to, in order to vacate on the ground that we can't tell what the BIA was doing, we'd have to at least agree with you that the IJ's theory was legally incorrect.
Yes, Your Honor.
Because otherwise it would be, at a minimum, you're agreeing it adopted the IJ's view, which unless that's legally incorrect, there's no reason to vacate.
That's correct.
Okay.
Unless Your Honor have any further questions, we ask the court to grant the petition. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes argument in this case.